Welcome to Invasion of Privacy. I'm Kate.
And I'm Suji.
And today we have guest Rob Ryan is with us.
Hi, how are you both today?
Yes, wonderful. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. And I want to say, so I haven't seen you in years.
I know.
You are kind of representing the Jesus look a bit. Have you gotten that?
Yeah. In fact, I've been on the road several times with Steve Hofstetter. Done a lot of stints with him, and we'll do these like 2 or 3 week stints at a time. And then he does a built-in Q&A section so that he can get some clips of some interactions. And it comes up a lot during the Q&A and stuff, to the point where it's just like, he has a canned response for some of these questions. I'm always trying to come up with something different, and then it's always unusable because it's always the same thing over and over again.
And I don't think I've ever showed you Steve Hofstetter's stand-up, but it's hard to describe, because like I feel like in the comedy scene, you just know Steve. He runs the Laughing Devil Comedy Festival. And it's interesting because I wrote down comedy festivals as one of the topics. But do you still do festivals, by the way?
That's a great question. I haven't done one in a very long time. It hasn't really, you know, because I think there's like a couple of different reasons why you would do one. And I'm not really at the level where they're like ringing me up to be their special guest.
Okay.
I'm also not like looking to try to like win some contest anymore or whatever dregs of other barely considered festivals that there are. I think the last one I did, which was really cool, was still several years ago, and that was Skankfest. I actually did a naked roast battle, and that was great. I actually really liked the way that whole thing was run. It was super cool. You got like...
You were fully naked?
Yeah, fully naked. And everybody was fully naked. The judges were fully naked. Everybody battling was fully naked. It was super respectful too. I mean, a room of like two, maybe 300 people, not a single cell phone, because they were like, you know, very, very strict about it. So it was really cool. It felt very just like, hey, whatever happens here, it'll live on in our memories and that's it. And I thought that was really pretty cool. When you actually were selected to be part of any one of the shows, you got this really sweet goodie bags. You got paid, but then in the goodie bag was like $100 bill, some weed, condoms. It was like this just ridiculous thing. But it was, anyway, so shout out to those guys for running a really fun comedy festival. But all the other ones, you know, not you know, there's really nothing much to write home about. So
are condoms just like a gag gift now? Do you use them anymore? I feel like they went out of style after Snoop Dogg. I feel like they were really in style for a while. Like everybody wraps it up; it's the cool thing to do. But then after a while, people are like, "This is not cool."
But you have to put context to it, because if you are having casual sex,
mm-hmm.
like I think people are using condoms because that can be the only way to like not get a real disease.
Do we not have anything better than that yet? So dated.
For STDs, for pregnancy, obviously, yes. But for STDs, I think a condom's like the only thing
yeah.
you have. So
what about how
you saying that is just like, I know what you're saying, but like that's coming from someone who's like monogamous and we've both been tested. Someone
yeah.
who's just out there swinging their dick or puss around, they need to wrap it up.
Well, like how easy
otherwise
is the
that's
morning?
Russian roulette with your privates.
Can't they? Isn't there like a pill where like you can swallow it and it'll just kill your sperm for the day? Has anyone made that yet? I totally want to make that if no one's done it yet.
There is some kind of male birth control that's in pill form that's on the market, and it hasn't been doing great. I think that the side effects the men aren't putting up with, they're not happy.
Men just like, aren't that responsible. Like women are much more responsible, so the birth control falls on them, but like men just aren't that responsible. So I feel like even if it's like a spray under your tongue, you forget. Spray well, under your tongue kind.
I think that even the perception of men would be enough for a woman to be like, wait, are you taking the pill every day? Oh yeah, I'm definitely taking
I couldn't be trusted. I couldn't be trusted with a pill.
No, you could be. I think you'd be one of the few men that would, because I think,
because I'm totally horrified of having a child.
A child without having the finances to properly support. Yes.
My fear of having a child would drive my OCD to take the pill every day.
But I feel like your fear is based on finances. I just think that, because otherwise I'd be pregnant yesterday.
You have a kid though, Kate. So how did that come to pass?
Something. Well, Shane was not planned. You know what I mean? So, and I think and you have a child. And I think when you have one that you weren't financially at that place ready, it teaches you like, oh, you need to be ready in many different areas before you have a kid. Which is pretty obvious when you say it, but like.
Weren't you guys trying out the lambskin condoms and that's what happened?
CG, no. That's
don't
not
they, have, they have that though, right? Don't you think?
I mean, we're talking about it as if we don't know, and yet you guys both have kids.
That's true.
He just thinks it's funny that like lambskin condoms existed. I don't know if they, I haven't seen lambskin condoms. Some people, supermarket.
I think that was a thing. I think it was a thing, but like it wasn't.
But it prevented pregnancy. But people said you could still get STDs with the lambskin condoms.
No, I didn't know that.
That's what I heard from my mother, I believe.
So they do prevent the pregnancy. That's the major thing to me.
I either learned from her or like our health ed teachers, but there was someone who like knew facts. But wait, I just need to fix this because I said Laughing Devil Festival. I meant Laughing Skull. It's the Laughing Skull Festival. I just, because if Steve somehow listens to this, I didn't want him upset. Because he's given me some good opportunities.
The lambskin condoms, are they itchy? Like, you know, if you wear a wool hat?
Right, that's true.
You wear a wool hat. Like, I can't wear a wool hat. And so I don't know if I could wear the lambskin.
Plus, you got to shear them every spring. So that's a big
thing. That's true. Mm. But like, if it's more comfortable, geez, I would have been rocking those back in the day. And they'll be like, oh, that's about the lambskin condoms.
Okay, let me move on topics to your solo show, because I do want to hear about what you're doing, what you're putting together. You said it's linked to 2 years ago when you were on my show that I had Dragon Sorcery. You shared, and I also kind of, if you don't mind sharing what you shared, it was really funny and deep and moving. So you shared a fun but deep and not fun. I guess it would be almost like joke/storytelling is what you shared. And then you got a tarot reading. So you said it affected, because I kind of felt this was coming through. So I just want to hear about your show. And if you want to link it to Dragon Sorcery, by all means, it would make me feel so good.
So I had back in like late 2018, 2019, finished an album, and then I released that album, and there was sort of this feeling and thought and reckoning that I was like, okay, well, I guess I just start compiling the new material and then coming up with effectively another hour of stand-up, but that really didn't speak to me too much either. And I'd also been going through a particularly like rough period in my life. There was just a lot of tragedy and things happening to me and around me. And so I just started to try to figure out a way to mine some of the more personal experiences and stories in my life and try to come up with some comedy around it. And it was around that time that I did catch wind of your show, Kate, that you were doing at New York Comedy Club at the time. And then I wanted to check it out. And I saw one, and I really liked the show and I liked the structure of it. And then I forget if I already had a slot on it or if I talked to you about it that night. But then the one thing that I did notice was that some of the comics were, they just treated it like almost as if it was any other show, where they was just like, because I think the point of it was like, well, come with some material, things that are really, you know, bothering you or on your mind, you can talk about it on stage. And then Kate was going to do a tarot card reading, do like a healing.
That's cool.
And I thought the idea was great. And then, you know, comics need healing. But then a lot of comics I saw, I was like, well, I know that person. And they just basically did their 10-minute set. And at the very tail end, there was like 30 seconds of like, oh, and then me and my boyfriend got into a fight or something like that. And then you'd talk about it. Yeah. And I was like, this is awesome. I love this structure of this show. But when I do it, which maybe was like a month from then, I said, but when I do it, I really want to have like the entire set to be just suffused with the stuff that I'm feeling and going through. And so I already had a couple of jokes laid out because I'd already been dabbling with some jokes about my mother's alcoholism when I was growing up and the fact that I don't drink alcohol and how that's linked and stuff. But then there were other things going on as well. There was this, you know, depression that I was going through, and I just lost my brother Tim, you know, a couple of years back. And my mother has also since passed away. And I was like, well, I want to go into this stuff and try to make it as fun as possible. But I thought if there was ever a show where I could kind of ride both lines and I think the audience might go with me, it would be this. And so I think it was about a 10-minute set. And then the tarot reading after that. And
I remember the audience being like, oh, like you brought it. And I was impressed too. I was like, oh, because you, like you said, you fell into the show. You mm-hmm. saw some of the comics doing their typical set. And when you came up, even I was like, oh, he's doing this. You know, you put out what you were going through, but it was still funny. You made sure you had, you know, those moments. It wasn't just like, oh shit, like all drama, you know, which exactly. I wouldn't have minded, honestly. But like, I tried to make the comedy stage something where it doesn't just have to be laughs, but it still fits. Like, I didn't want to make it where there's no laughs and then Emilio's like, get out of New York Comedy Club. like, go off Broadway, you know? But I appreciated. I remember your sharing as like, oh, whoa. And I remember the audience too being like, kind of gasping in a good way, like, whoa, he's sharing some real shit.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe I was dabbling with a couple of those jokes, maybe a story here or there, but I had not really dedicated an entire set to allowing, like, letting the audience know that, like, well, you're not going anywhere and this is just going to keep on, you know, going. We're going to keep on going deeper. And but the reaction afterwards, and this was so, you know, I've already been doing stand-up for many years. I've had a lot of successes still. You mentioned, you know, festivals before. I'd even won the Boston Comedy Festival only like maybe a year or two back before then.
Congratulations.
Contest with a big prize. So like I've had some of my laurels, and I felt good about shows that I've done. I've certainly had conversations with audience members afterwards, but this just was by and large different. Immediately there were, you know, someone would give me a hug, some other person was like telling me about their experiences with either drug abuse or their family's drug abuse. And this wasn't a big crowd. I mean, maybe it was 20, like 30 people in the crowd, right? So it's not like this huge, wasn't packed 120 people. And yet there was all this connection. And so it really was, to my memory, that show that made me like really go, I really have to double down on this. I'm making sort of connections with the crowd while still I was able to entertain them. This was fun and funny, but I've never really interacted with a crowd like this after a show. And so I just want to keep on mining this as much as I could. And what that over the next couple of years eventually developed into is this 90-minute solo show called Mascot that I now do get to put up off Broadway at the Soho Playhouse this December.
Awesome. That's huge.
It's 90 minutes? It's just you for 90 minutes straight?
90 minutes straight. No lambskin, just straight, you know, skin. Yeah. It's a big deal. and this is something that like, so it's not like I haven't headlined before, so it's
like
not
headlining. What is like max an hour? I feel like usually max an hour. So like 90 is a stretch. Mm-hmm. And even just allowing your vocal cords to last that long, because I know after headlining, I was like having to.
I get tired watching a 90-minute movie. Yeah. Like, let alone me actually doing something for 94 minutes.
Everything on all accounts, you're right. I remember the first time I had done, because I started writing this, but keep in mind the timing of this. So this was like, again, in 2019, late 2019. So now I'm starting to develop this material, try to get it up as best I can. And of course, you know, everything closes down shortly thereafter. And luckily I had enough experience under my belt to have tested this stuff out as best I could, the funny parts. And then I really took to going over these Zoom calls. I had some writers groups, friends of mine, and what they were doing is they were doing scripts. So it's like I may have met with like 6 or 7 other people, and everyone brought in 8 to 10 pages. Maybe you've been a part of writing groups like this yourself. And we all take parts and we read. And I asked my friend Bethany, I said, you know, I have something, but it's not really a script with dialogue. It's just a solo show that I'm working on, and then I would be the one to read it. Is that okay? And it was funny because she, you know, I think she was right with it, but her partner like hemmed and hawed a little bit. She was like, well, that's really not the point of this. I was like, I don't know, can I just do the thing? And so I started developing the large chunks of this show by just showing up every week, reading like 4 or 5, a couple of minutes at a time, getting some feedback. And I developed sort of the storytelling aspects of it as much as I could via Zoom. I did my first full reading of the thing via Zoom. It was about 100, it was like 100 plus minutes at that point. Talk about losing your voice. Afterwards, I'm just exhausted. My voice is shot. And so you're right, it takes a ton of stamina and just some kind of a lot of preparation and just making sure that you're just physically able to do that. And then speaking to your point, yeah, you have to keep their attention for a movie's worth.
What's of, it about? If you don't mind me asking, without giving away too much.
No, of course. So, like I started to mention, what I started to realize that this show was going to be about was that a lot of the material that I had developed already was about my childhood and growing up with this alcoholic parent. And it was my mother who was the alcoholic, which always felt a bit bizarre and unique to people. And even when I would tell people, they'd always kind of respond almost flippantly, like, wow, it's never the mom. That's so so strange. And then as I started to develop that more, I was also personally just going through a lot myself. And a lot of that was coming from the fact that my older brother, my oldest brother, he had struggled through so much of his adult life with depression himself. And, you know, I always felt like that me and my two older brothers, we were so close growing up and we went through such, you know, such a shit childhood, but we felt like we were kind of growing into each other and that as long as we had each other, we were gonna be all right. And we still had these like, you know, big plans that our lives were going to be something else and we'd grow out of this shit. So it was just that much more heartbreaking to me that I wasn't recognizing it as a kid, but all this stuff is seeping into us, into our heads and our hearts. And my brother Tim may have gotten just the worst of it. And he really suffered ever since he was a teenager significantly. And then just watching him struggle and suffer as an adult without the substance abuse part of it, though, kind of allowed me to almost witness, because I'd lost my mother when I was 19, so I never really got to maybe truly as an adult get to see her through that lens. I know sometimes people do when they do have you know, abusive or alcoholic parents. Sometimes as an adult, strangely, when you're away from that, you gain this perspective, not that it was okay, but you almost kind of get it a little bit more. You're like, shit, there's a lot of stress and shit in your life. And I don't think that you did a good job raising us, but I kind of maybe have a different understanding of you now that I'm an adult. But I never really even got to have that with my mother, but I did get to experience my brother suffer and struggle and deteriorate throughout his adult life. And so I started to kind of gain this empathy for her, or sort of understand a piece of maybe some of what she was going through inwardly to have abused her, you know, body so much with alcohol, but through my brother Tim. And then eventually and ultimately, we wound up losing him as well. And he took his own life. By all accounts, by everything that I can point to. And it was something that it sort of was this time release thing for me. I was very much just in this emergency mode shock situation for the next year or two, where I'm just trying to plant my feet down. And then there was a point by which like the whole, all the bottom just comes out from under me. And I was just at the lowest that I had ever been. And I thought that I was, I said, well, this is the worst thing that I could possibly ever go through. And objectively, yes.
The universe is like, I can make it lower.
Like, oh, you think you seem bad.
Yeah. The universe likes to take us to the bottom sometimes. It's kind of the Phoenix. It is Phoenix energy of like the resurrection-y thing of can you come up from this? But whoa, yeah, the struggle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry that you've makes had you such a tough life, but it does make you badass.
Coming back from the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, never say you hit rock bottom, because then the universe will be like, oh, hold my beer. I can
exactly.
But so that was exactly where, and then I started, like I said, just going through the worst, most depressive and suicidal experience I ever had in my life. And this just went on for years. And it was just unbelievable how.
While in comedy too, right? Like.
Yeah, exactly. And
you're going on stage. Having to like bring,
you gotta put the face on.
Yeah, while, because I can relate, I hit a big time low and it was happening while I was having to go on stage and pull it together. And it's pretty crazy. I mean, you can do it. It's just, it's nuts.
It was even almost worse than that because then like I had planted a lot of seeds and so things actually started like happening for me that weren't before. So my comedy career up to that point was thriving in a way that it never had before. I was the most miserable that I'd ever been before. I remember I was doing a show in Timonium, if you remember the Magoobies there in outside of Baltimore. And there was two shows and I literally just do it. It was just a feature spot. So I was doing like my 30 minutes. I went back to my car and just fucking just sobbing in my car just for the next hour and a half until the late show. And then I was like, all right, I got to go back on stage. And I just went back. And that was
fucking horrible.
It was so bad. And then people afterwards were like, you're great. That was so funny. You know, I'll take a picture. And swear to God, I remember I called my friends and be like, I was like, is this what it's about? Like, do I have to be, like, is this why I'm doing as well as I am right now? Because I don't give a shit. Like, I'm so fucking over it. I'm so done. I don't give a fuck about the crowd, about anything I've written. Everything's so stupid. It's all meaningless. But for some reason, is that energy of me, like, you know, almost flicking a cigarette, not giving a shit, is somehow that shining through that all of a sudden everybody's just like, wow, this guy doesn't give a fuck. Like, we need to.
We love this guy. Yeah. I get it.
I was like, that can't be, right? I was like having a fucking meltdown because I was like, that's not fair. I mean, it's like the Twilight Zone episode with the guy breaking his glasses if he's got all the books in the world. I'm like, this isn't fair. No way. So that was a big scary moment for me.
Writing Mascot as this was happening, like that, or one, you know, was that, I know that it, I'm believing Mascot is about all of this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm wondering if you were writing it as it was happening or if you wrote it when you kind of came through.
Yeah, you know what? So the vast majority of it was definitely conceived of and written while I was still going through probably the worst of it. So, you know, that comedic brain, I'm still kind of absorbing a lot of this stuff and a lot of the experiences that I'm having, maybe not funny yet, but a lot of it is what winds up being in the show. The entire first act is really about my childhood with my mother. And the second act is, getting into my brother as an adult, our relationship, and then ultimately losing him. And then the third act gets into pretty much this time period that I'm talking about now, which was like my, you know, what I have to start dealing with and reckoning with then. And then, so the whole third act is really about this, you know, several years period in my life where I am just unable to comprehend everything that's happening to me. And the whole show as an arc is really supposed to be about empathy, in that I could, from a very far distance, you know, I couldn't understand as a kid at all what my mother was going through. I was in survival mode, and she was an antagonist in my life. And even when she passed away, there was a large amount of relief, just that this fear and this, you know, this danger wasn't kind of continually be a thing. And then, like I said, as I watched my brother go through some of the same pains that I'm sure my mother suffered through, but without some of that, without that drug abuse and without that, you know, just my mother was very outward. She just took all her pain and lashed out at people. My brother took everything on the chin. Anything that went wrong, it was just all inward. And so but then I lost him. And then I'm like, well, that's sad. And I feel bad for both of them. But it wasn't until I started to just feel like I needed to just exit this world too, until I really got a sense of just maybe a sense of how maybe my brother had felt and maybe my mother had felt. And so as I slowly kind of started to crawl out of that, that's unfortunately what gave me, you know, the perspective that I kind of needed in order to understand them both a little bit better. And the way I sort of like to frame the show or bookend it is that I never drink. I've never drank alcohol and I've never had those substance problems, but I fucking love ex-addicts. I think that they're just so cool. They have this like wisdom to their, they just have this like way of being and acting. And I've always wanted to be an ex-addict because I'm just like, so cool. Talking to Yoda. I love them just the way they are. I'm like, and I always wonder, like, can I somehow have the swagger of an ex addict without the whole like I ruined my life part? Like, is there like
skip the addict part? Yeah, like, I can't do what you're trying to do. So I don't know, man. Maybe you can.
You have the vibes, and here's why. It's really about hitting.
He has the vibes of an ex addict.
Yes. Which is a compliment here, because it's the vibes of someone who's hit a rock bottom and had to see what that's like and get out of it. It's really just like seeing life from a perspective that maybe you didn't think you'd see it from, because you never expected to be so low, you know, like, and I know I'll just speak for myself. I won't speak for you, but you know, I growing up, even though I didn't have an easy childhood and was depressed, I didn't even fully know I was depressed. You know what I mean? Like, I think
that cheerleader smile, you could
tell. Yeah, like I was in that mode, and then never thought I would hit a low, but really what it was just unraveling certain defenses. You know, I didn't know that when I was thinking, oh, I'm always gonna be happy and together and successful, you know? And then when you're in the low, you're like, oh, I'm that person. And especially when you're like also doing comedy, it's a mind fuck. Makes me think of Robin Williams. You know, yeah. I think of that often when just talking about situations like this, because fame and all that doesn't mean anything if you're not in a good place. If you're in a good place and you're having it, I'm sure it's wonderful. But if you're, you know, if all these other things are feeling off, it's just almost a curse, you know? So I think it's cool that you went through it, that you channeled it. We'll get into some lighter topics too.
No, you know, this is what I've been steeped in for a while, and it has not been, it's not been sad or depressing to me. It's a good thing. And to speak to both your points, yeah, that's exactly what hopefully winds up being the sort of resurrection of the show, which is that, there's a realization that by going through this version of hell, you know, maybe I don't have that ex-addict swagger, but there's a piece of it, you know, that I've sort of chunked off, and I go, okay, that's something at least. And so that's where a lot of like the heart of the show tries to lie in, and these themes of sort of breaking this generational trauma because my mother was just she grew up in an abusive alcoholic household herself. And and then I like to quip where my grandfather, I don't really care, he's just an asshole. I mean, we can stop the empathy train at some point. We don't have to keep on going back generations. We can just pretend he's a piece of shit.
And I think that's cool to say stuff like that and be blunt sometimes. One of my topics, and I am going to link it to this, is I don't know if you heard Doja Cat's new song, Paint the Town Red. It's causing some controversy, and I'm just bringing it up as art being a form of expression, whether or not you like that song. You know, sometimes when you're going through it, you're carrying a lot of anger. Sometimes it's just through art that you're able to survive that place. I know you wrote a book at your low point. That's brilliant, you know, and I think sometimes it actually keeps you alive, you know, that expression.
Yeah, yeah, it kept me sane.
Yeah, when you're going through that and you have all these complex thoughts that are hard to share or maybe impossible to share in that moment, sometimes, you know, you pick your art form, whether it's comedy, rapping, writing a book, writing a play, you know, and I think with Doja Cat, whether, because her video that goes with it is very devil themed. I don't mind it. I see it as a form of expression. What was that one song? It's like a major song where it's like the Devil's Symphony, right? Symphony of the Devil. Like, this is not the first time.
Sympathy for the Devil?
Sympathy. I'm just saying, like, it's not the first time we've talked about the devil in a song. And in the Kabbalistic tree of life, devil equals malchut, which is just manifested reality. It becomes the devil when you don't know how to navigate your desires as a human. And I think a lot of our parents, in terms of healing generational trauma, I think that generation didn't have the tools that we're starting to have of even expression and sharing. I think they suppressed and were told to suppress so much that it came out really jagged. Like, when I hear people had a decent childhood, I'm more shocked. I'm like, what?
You know, fuck you. We were friends before this.
I mean, you know,
anybody who says they really have a decent.
So every now and then someone's like, oh, I had a great childhood. And I'm just like, I almost like don't know how to relate at all. I'm just like,
because you feel weird.
I just don't even believe it. I feel like that generation, because everyone's connected, like there's still so much trauma we're just healing in general that's been passed down. And like each generation maybe gets a little more evolved. I think now we're in a huge jump where of all ages, if you choose to want to evolve and face your blind spots, you know, if you just want to grow past certain things, you can. Not everyone's choosing to, whatever. But I think... yeah, I love people wanting to look and evolve. And I think now we're at a time and we're still feeling Lionsgate energy, if you're into all that, that if you want to evolve, which I don't know why someone wouldn't want to, but, you know, you can.
When I feel like I had a little bit of a fucked up one, whenever I feel like that, I'm like, there were times, though, where there was like wars and like famine, like there were some really shitty times.
I mean,
and
horrible.
So like, yeah, so
and we're still healing.
I don't necessarily want to say bad or good either way. There were some bad aspects, but like there were some pretty shitty times.
Medieval times.
Like, in the times where people just tried to kill you for like a chicken, you know what I mean? Where like you are really in danger all the fucking time. It was probably
that's
hard
not
to parent.
My time to be
it was
alive.
Hard to parent.
I don't think I'd ever choose to manifest. I would get a serious UTI first day alive, medieval times. I'd be out. Do you know what
like
I mean? I would be like,
time,
oh, I'll manifest when it's a little easier.
I feel like that's the only time in history where I would be a useful parent or guardian. Time where people might come and kill you for stuff, and then you just have the hammer. Like the hammer is the best tool that you can use. That's the best weapon of the time.
Oh my
so like
god!
Just a blunt object. I feel
that's
like I'd be
time,
a great
the hammer.
That would be my time in history to be like a great parent or patron.
Yeah, that wasn't my time.
No, like dad clubbed him. It's okay. The guy almost murdered us, but dad clubbed him.
Well, maybe
otherwise in history, like I wasn't born at the right time. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, you are.
There's other places in the world you can live right now if you want to. It's not even a matter of time. It's about go to Haiti, go to Ukraine. You can. There's plenty of like go to the Congo if you want to. If you want to be the hammer dude,
Congo, I would die so fast.
No, it couldn't be now because they even now they have like sharpened knives and arrows and stuff.
Oh,
like,
I see.
It has to be like very primitive.
Yes, yes, yes.
Very
yes,
primitive. You just whack someone with something heavy. That time, exactly. A little time exactly after that, I'm useless.
No.
A little bit, give it, yeah, give it 50, 100 years after that, totally useless.
You have such an evolved mind.
That didn't get me anywhere.
Oh, is that not funny to say? Sometimes I'm just too, I got a writing job from this one like parent place for 3 months, and they'd send back the notes on like the jokes I wrote. They'd be like, too earnest in all caps. And I was like, dang, like, I'm a sincere person. I don't get sarcasm, which sometimes I do, but like it goes over my head. And I think it's because like I'm working on it though. I'm trying to be a sarcasm detector and roll with it.
That's really funny you say that, because I mean, as someone who does like to joke around a lot, and sometimes like I'll dip into like how wry I can be with my jokes. I usually try to like telegraph them a little bit, because I don't like pranking people. I don't like lying to people. I just kind of like, you know, being a little tongue in cheek. But when people do it back to me, I swear, Kate, it's the exact same, where I'm just like, I'm like listening. I'm too intent on like trying to get their purpose and understand what they're saying that I will forget. They're like, I'm kidding. I'm like, oh, well, you, maybe that was true. I don't know.
But you might have to work on this, because I feel like I get too heart to heart. You know what I mean? Like I talk to someone, I'm like,
yeah.
And sometimes that's like not the vibe. You know what I mean? Like sometimes I like,
gaze.
Yeah, like sometimes I want to be able to chill it out and roll with it and be like, that was sarcasm. Yeah.
Sometimes you people know? Don't want you to be looking into their soul.
Right.
You know, not at all conversations. They want you to look at through their eyes into their soul.
I get now, like sometimes it's great when it naturally happens to get into like the intense heartfelt, but I am trying to pull back, because when everything becomes that, that's exhausting. That's a whole other, like, let's always, it almost becomes energy draining when everything has to be intense. I feel like when I went through spiritual school, I really got in that vibe of like, everything should be a deep share. And maybe when you need that and you're still like healing certain trauma, that's great. But I feel like sometimes it can be like, oh, I don't want to swim in those waters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like I'm learning how to not, I meant to detect sarcasm. But
I avoid serious and deep conversations like the plague. That's why I like jokes. It's great to avoid any sort of thing,
deep conversation,
any sort of issues. If we, you know, it's the best way to run from it.
It's a wild, like, code switching, like, type of skill to have when you can, you know, be in a mixed company. And someone could just like throw a bunch of, you know, suicide jokes, whatever. And you're just kind of like, bing, bang, boom. And you're just kind of rolling with the punches. Yeah, I know. Slip my wrist, right? Blah, 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 blah. But then when necessary, and you need to like switch it and go like, yeah, but like, are you, you know, is it something that's been bothering you? Are you struggling with that? Whatever. Yeah. And to like, I'll be able to do that so that nobody thinks that you're such a drag, but also nobody thinks, you know, this one particular person doesn't think that you're being like flippant and, you know, insensitive. That's huge to be able to kind of juggle that skill and go back and forth between it. That's such a big, big deal.
Yeah. And I think without the light in there, whether it's humor or just, you know, it does become almost like, I'm trying to think of the right word, like you're marinating in it. You're trying to get something out of the intense if you don't know how to make it light. But I think people always avoid, that's uncomfortable too.
And this is literally has been like a guiding principle when I've been writing this show, which is like, I'm really trying to strike this line, and I have not always found it on stage, and hopefully with each iteration I find it more and more. But I've had a couple of guiding principles, one of them being like, I do not want anybody who has gone through similar experiences to walk away from this show feeling as if that I have kept this at an arm's length distance, that I'm just sort of deflecting and making fun of it so that I don't really have to deal with it or process it. Because look, there are some jokes, there are some depression jokes and suicide jokes and whatever, abuse jokes, that are very funny. And I really enjoy when comics can do it and pull it off well. But 9 times out of 10, it's very kept at an arm's length. It's pure deflection. And it's just like, oh, I don't care. That doesn't bother me. You know? And I really had this like feeling where I said, no, I want it to affect me, and I want it to affect the audience. If anything else, I really want us to kind of go down into the depths together, feel these things, laugh at them, but feel them the way you might in real life. And then once we've felt it, we can kind of start to like pull ourselves out of it instead. And what's wild to me, because this is true, I would go to stand-up clubs, New York Comedy Club, wherever, I'd have like 10 minutes on a Friday night, but all I had was I was determined that I wasn't going to do any of my old material. All I was going to do was work towards this show. And all I had was like 10 minutes of potential suicide jokes that I thought might work. And so I literally have to go up and on like a Friday night at 10:30 p.m. just be like, hey guys, I just have 10 minutes of suicide jokes and that's it. So you just got to deal with it. Is it okay? Is everyone cool with that? Are you good? Okay, whatever. And then I would go. Or I would have to be working on like act two or act three where all this prerequisite information was already there. And so I'd have to be like, hey guys, you know, my name's Rob Ryan. My mom's dead. She was an alcoholic and right, my brother's suicidal. So that's where we're at. I don't have time to explain, but are we good? Are we caught up? Everyone okay? Yeah. All right. And then I would just go because I had no other way to like try to workshop this material 10 minutes at a time. But that was huge for me, was the ability to be cool, almost like it, where I'm like, well, I don't want to be a drag and I don't want to be so focused and serious and looking you in the eye the whole time. But I also didn't want to make it seem like, this doesn't bother me. I can make jokes about it. So
yeah, that would suck to watch too. Just like all deflective jokes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've gotten the good flow of both, but I just think it's important in life, you know, not just in your show. It's like both.
Yeah.
Figuring out that balance. I know when we first reconnected, I was very serious. You know what I mean? And it's funny because I had just kind of, I was in the comedy world and I was just such a serious person, other than the stage.
I
also want to bring up
a
different topic. It'll be related, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. We got into it's not just Too Hot to Handle. Love Island UK.
Oh, get out. What?
I only want to bring it up. I don't want to get into like
so good.
The details. And then Ella and Todd, like we don't have to do all that. It's more of, I think it's the psychology of it that I find it fascinating. And it's just funny. I'll let you, because you at first, when you were watching me watch it, you were like, I'm
no,
not
it was great
this.
To sit down and to make fun of the show. That's how it started. And then like three or four episodes in, then I was really invested and I cared about who's in love. And I was like, you can't love two people at the same time, Sammy. Yeah, dude. You know, like I got really into it. And I was loving my life by the end. And we just watched the reunion.
Oh, nice. Cool. How was that?
And they, you know,
saucy.
They fuck with these people, man. They just everything.
The producers. Anything they can do. And like, I'm kind of used to that from reality TV, but he doesn't watch cheesy reality too much. So he was like, whoa, these producers. He loves it though.
Look, I can hear any class that I have oozing as I watch the reality shows, but there's something else like coming them. In that I like sweet sugar, like sweet nectar that I'm sucking down. But as my class goes out the window.
Do you watch any reality shows?
Man, I really do avoid them pretty consistently. I'm trying to even think of the last one that I actually truly watched. There's something about just the rhythm and the pattern of it. I just can't seem to get into it. I couldn't even enjoy Nick Kroll's show, Kroll Show, as much because it was just parodying a whole genre of television that I only sort of like tangentially knew kind of. So no, not really. I did try to produce
it. You're a better person for it. It's why you're successful.
No. You
like it's the reason. I think that most people who aren't doing anything with their lives.
True. Some people just love reality TV. And I think you mm-hmm. can get something out of it depending on which one, you know, and what's going on. I found this one. I'm into love, you know, and I feel like I could see who was like a twin flame and who wasn't. Like I was studying it.
Sure.
Yeah. Like I love watching people try to find love because I think intimacy and wanting to be seen is linked to our spiritual journey. It's just wanting to be connected, wanting to share yourself and the complexities of who you are. And you can't do that easily. You know, like I'm lucky to have you. I'm a weirdo. We've known each other since middle school. And I feel like I can be my true self, and I'm still healing, just so I can be more and more of that. Like, I can't wait till I start singing more as I heal.
Oh, that's a thing that's going to happen?
Yeah. Like, even though I'm very Dr. Seuss-like, like, I like to speak in rhyme. He thinks it's so cringe, but I still feel safe to do it, you know? So I just can't wait till
she's not, I don't try to make a safe environment for this stuff. Like, that's not my purpose.
Yeah,
but by accident, it's like an accident.
He will, if it becomes,
I would rather make an unsafe environment.
Too corny, he'll definitely be like, I don't know what I just heard, but I don't like it. Like, if it's too sing-songy, whatever. But yeah. I'm just saying, yeah, I think I will be way more singer. That I think that part of me is going to definitely come out more and more as I heal, because it's like wounding that holds it back. So,
and it's funny because me, like, creating a safe environment is the furthest thing from what I am trying
to
do.
That's not true, you dick.
I want it to be a judgment
Are
zone.
You sarcasm.
It's very no. I mean,
is he?
No, I mean, I like to. Like, I like classrooms where there are bullies in the classrooms, and so there aren't too many bad jokes, because if there's a bad joke, you'll get killed.
Ah, it's interesting.
So there aren't too many bad outfits, because if there's a bad outfit, you'll get killed. You know, stuff like that. Like,
that's
I kind of grew up in
that. I agree to a certain extent, but, like, there's a slippery slope with the bully energy, but there has to be, instead of saying bullying, I'm going to say boundary, like, healthy boundary energy, where you don't want to get too soft where people are laughing at bad jokes, because that's offensive too. Then it's like, wait, no, you need some, you know, skepticism, and just, you know, keep it to keep everything good, like art, to keep the art cream of the crop.
But if you're like, rhymes are making me feel like I'm growing a vagina, then I need to put up some sort of, to keep my, that I'm a man. Instead of, it's hard to just say, like, oh, that was a great rhyme.
I still write raps. I have not shared my raps with the world in a long time, but I'll share them with him, and he is not into them, but I'll still share them, and he'll be like, you are the whitest sounding rapper I've ever heard. And I'm like, I haven't gotten my rap voice yet. I still share it. So even though you're not trying to create a safe artistic space, you are.
It's an accident is all I'm saying.
Whatever.
I always liked the idea, because I remember I used to think that, I thought it was always funny that, like, hip hop and, like, rap stars came out of the hood, because that's just not something that I would associate with, like, being really hard and being in a gang and selling drugs. And it's like, yeah, and I like poetry and I like rhyming words, and you're like, whoa. I thought we were about, you know, slinging guns and beating people up. Like, yeah, but then sometimes I like writing down my emotions and my feelings. And you're like, bro, wait a minute. You know, art springs out from everywhere. So, you know,
exactly.
you can't keep those hip hop artists down.
Yeah.
I love it, man. Yeah, rap on. I'm big on that. I think that's great.
Okay. He's not happy that I still want to release my raps at some point, but I'm happy. But when I do, it's going to be okay from a different space. I definitely, because, you know.
I just don't want to listen to it personally.
That's so rude. You're going to want to when I get really good.
If you come out with it and
you've heard it, though, before, right? I know at least one of Kate's joints. It's good. Solid.
Thank you. I am not very proud of my past raps. I'm proud of some of the bars, but I would love to sound better. And, you know, it was like my first go at it. I still think in rhyme a lot. I write stuff down, and I'm just not someone to be defeated. And I'm not as obsessed with timelines as most people. So I'm like, if when I'm feeling it is in 15 freaking years, then that's when I'm feeling it, and that's when I'll do it. You know, like, I'm waiting till everything feels right and I feel my confidence is back. But, like, you know, I won't ever bury dreams. That's like against my dragon sorceress beliefs. You know, I'm not going to do that.
I need to backpedal a little bit. They're not bad raps. They're just, like, so girly. She's such a girl cheerleader. And then I can't do it. You know what I mean? It's like,
because I'm like, you want to hear my raps? And then the way I rap is, like, very girly, like, woo! What? Now I gotta do. Okay, this is a gangster. I still am, you know, trying to release anger. I don't want to stay in this place.
Of course.
But, I go, okay, black hat like William. If they come for me, I kill them. Then I stuff them. I fill them because I gotta make my millions. So that's dark, but I still say it like a funny cheerleader. So
well, the because star, I know her and she doesn't want to kill anyone. She doesn't want to hurt anyone. Rob their millions. She just doesn't want to.
No, I didn't say Rob. No, I didn't say your name's Rob. I said, because I got to make my millions. I said, if they come for me.
If they come for
it's
you.
It's like, if you're going to come for me and try to kill me, I'm going to have to do what I got to do.
Gotcha.
So that's really, it's just like, it's like that threat. It's like a frog being a neon color. It's like, don't you come for me, then I'll have to fight back. But I'd rather not. But anyway, I just chose that one. Not all of my bars are that aggressive, but I just wanted to give an example.
I find you very non-threatening, and I feel your raps are extremely threatening. So well, that's the only thing because I know and I live with
you. I still
you.
Have some anger I'm releasing.
And so, yeah. But maybe people who don't live with you would think it's hot fire. Yeah, right?
Those bars are hot fire.
Those bars are fucking hot fire.
He makes fun of me. Sometimes he'll be like, oh my God, look at the sky. It's sick. He thinks like he'll redo it.
Oh my God. Man. Ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
I love
it. I mean, she's into it. When that happens, there's some cool shit she's looking at. You know, when that, because it like overtakes
like,
you.
I have a Care Bear personality. So when I try to be like, when I'm like, oh my God, it's sick. It definitely doesn't sound the way most people would say it, but I've got my own flavor.
I feel like, you know.
Who says sick though? Is that like a skateboarder from Missouri? Like a skateboard kid?
Sick just has to come from within. It's like, I'm not a surfer, but it's like surfer mentality. It's like, that's sick.
Yeah, I do say sick a lot. I know I got some of the kids are saying fire more and more these days. I'm not about fire just yet. But I've seen sick. I'm like, well, that is sick. That's so cool. I also play
I don't
a lot.
Think I know anyone who says sick. That's why, like, in real life, I never hear it. So if I hear it from her, I just get so off because I'm like, what community were you raised in where people said this? And so it's just foreign to me, but I guess people do say it.
But I will say this, I also play a lot of poker, and in the poker world, sick is almost, it's ubiquitous. People say sick a lot. Like, there's a sick call, sick read, sick hand. Yeah, people are like, oh my God, that's so sick. It's just, it's everywhere. So
You made it sound legit yourself. It's not pretty legit. Now I heard how it's supposed to sound.
I think I say it great, but
you know what's the other thing too? No one to date, I don't think, has come for Kate yet. So you really you haven't seen it yet. You don't really know what you know dragons inside her and what can be released. So like, it's just her inability maybe to articulate it perfectly for you doesn't matter. Like, it almost makes me think that like all these articulate rappers who can so perfectly describe what they're feeling, it's almost like, yeah, like, are you though? You know what I'm saying? It's almost like they're all talk, but Kate's got so much inside her that like, it's not, you can't tame that beast.
And I guess I don't picture anyone really coming after or attacking a little sweet white lady. your personality is not really to
the attacks that I felt were not that they were deserving. I'm not going to say that, but I'm not a victim in it. I was putting out some very strong things in my stand-up in certain areas. It's where I was at, and then people had responses, and that's fair. You know what I mean? And then I got to navigate differently, but I definitely had attacks. I mean, I remember I headlined Atlantic City Comedy Club on a Good Friday and had Jesus jokes about how he was a good looking man. And the truth is, if you're really a fan of Jesus, that's a compliment. Okay. I'm saying he's a good looking man. You know what I mean? But this woman was like offended. Like she thought I was attacking her religion, you know, and all that was sacred to her and all that was taught that she had to protect. So, you know, she was attacking me on Facebook stuff, but at the same time, she felt attacked. And that's kind of, it was in a sense, my you know, I kind of knew I was doing that a little then, but I wasn't ready for some of those attacks. And now I don't know what I'm ready for, but I definitely want to keep expressing. But I don't want all my stuff, if I keep writing raps, to be aggressive. You know, I think some could be in that vein, but I would like to maybe move to heal some of my anger inside and get to some other fun raps.
Like what kind of fun things? Because I think
about consciousness.
I think raps
about,
have to be about, like,
about how reality's changing and different dimensions are coming. Like, I want to use my third eye vision to really create raps, because then it's like unique, like so unique. You know, I want to start kind of putting in my third eye visions into my raps. However that looks, I don't fully know yet, but I would like to start going to that place.
Because rap's supposed to be about, like, talking smack to those Mark Busters. You know what I mean? That's what it's always been about. That's what it'll always be about. And so, like, I think you are doing it right. It just, you know, I'm not completely on it yet. You know, I'm not completely on board.
We're here as multifaceted beings to break rules lovingly and figure out, you know what I mean? Like, what's rap to me? I know, like, rap has a thing. I'm not trying to completely disrespect it or anything, but yeah. I think it's cool when you're, like, approaching it as an artist, anything, whether it's the canvas, you know, it's music, whatever, and just saying, like, what's my unique flavor in this and how can I play with it without desecrating the art form, you know? I think I maybe accidentally have desecrated things over my life.
I've desecrated several art forms.
Accidentally, sure. You know, just taking things to an extreme maybe, but I think we're all allowed to learn and grow, and that's what humanity and life's about. So I try to give myself as many chances as possible. and humanity, you know what I mean? But I'm definitely like, all right, I put that out. That wasn't hitting the mark, whatever, and now let's see what I can try to do from this place.
I agree. I mean, I think that, like, if the art form is born from some kind of struggle and oppression, then you can just change, you can flip the script on what that means to you. You know, you're struggling, you know, in this bodily form, right? You're being oppressed by the sort of constrained thought that you have before being open and free. Fuck yeah.
I kind of wish I was raised somewhere where, like, you dealt with things by scatting. You know, scat when people are like, skidibop, you know, and you just, like, how do you start doing that and just start getting good at it? And that's, like, your thing. Like, that you scat now. Like, you're raised in a family where you scat the emotions away. Like, you. I want to know what kind of culture. I want to be in a house for a little while. Just like, or have a camera in a house for a little while in a place where that happens. Cause it seems like just a different, it seems like a world that shouldn't exist, but it does exist. Against all odds, it exists.
So
I want to know
what it looks like. Scatting soon.
Yeah. It's like a cousin of beatboxing, you know, drummers are always kind of slapping things around and stuff. It's probably just a nervous energy that's coming out. I saw a video of this kid in, he was in the Ukraine actually, and he was just rapping about his life circumstances. The kid was like 8-9 years old or something, and it was kind of nuts to just see him spitting and just being like, all right, these are my life experiences, whatever. And it was really kind of cool to see. So I would say that yeah, like, there's an attitude and there's, like, something about hip-hop that comes through, but you can't be like not true to your own life and your own circumstances. So if you're just kind of making shit up, rapping about the same things that you hear other people rapping about, well, that's going to be disingenuous. That's not going to come off as cool and true and real. So just, like, speak to your own truth. And then now it doesn't even matter. It's just like, hey, if people glom onto that, great. If not, that's cool too.
Yeah. Like, this is the thing. Like, I never sold drugs, but I feel like I bought enough drugs to be very convincing, you know, that I sold drugs in a rap.
Yeah, if you compiled it,
you
would have gotten hit with the with intent to sell. Exactly.
Oh my gosh. All right. So we're gonna wrap this up. Thank you, Rob, for joining us. Where can people find you? Where can they find the show?
Absolutely. So
Instagram, all of it.
Yeah, where's the show?
Yeah. Actually, you know what?
Soho Playhouse.
That's true. So the show is still a bit away. So if you wanted to purchase tickets for it, you actually can still. It's at the Soho Playhouse at the first three weekends in December, starting November 30th, December 1, 2, 7, 8, 9, and 14, 15, 16. It's called Mascot. That is the only thing I'm pushing right now, because every single day I wake up is some laundry list of things to do, whether it's promotion, creative, logistics, all that stuff.
You're doing three nights in a row for 3 weeks straight?
Exactly. So nine shows total. This is a 178 seat theater, so we need to fill those puppies up. But other than that, Rob Ryan Rocks are all my handles. And then we also have Rob Ryan Mascot, MASCOT, for, you know, just for show purposes and stuff. And I can't thank you guys enough for having me on. This is the first podcast that I got to openly discuss the show, because up to this point, we didn't have anything official. There were no like official dates or anything else. So I'm, you know, you got me right out the gate.
Yeah.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. And I hope it's a huge success, truly.
Yeah.
Please come on out. You guys are special invites for sure. Front row seats.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have to try to do a whole.
Do a Manhattan thing.
Like go eat before.
Yes.
I look at that as your idea of like the most special night. We got to do something really special. Go eat before we get there. He's really low maintenance. It's kind of nice for me. It's very relaxed, which he thinks are big deals. I can keep up.
I haven't been in Manhattan in a bit. So having a Manhattan, I know, because, and I was coming in constantly, but the traffic, it's just like the anxiety of doing the drive-in, but I'm starting to be like, should we move back to the area so I can do comedy full-time again? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm starting to be pulled, whether it's visiting the area more so I can get on stage more, whatever, but
I love it.
He's vibing with it yet. I want to get him on stage.
Do it.
I'm scared.
You do whatever you want.
Yeah, you can scat on stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone who scats on stage should.
Don't, because you're going to have an awesome scatter out there be your enemy.
Exactly.
Tell that to the scat man.
I don't want that beef.
You don't want that.
Forget I said that, scat guy.
You don't want that.
I don't want that beef.
From some talented scatter.
I ain't about that life.
No. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for joining us. And everybody, have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.